President Biden is nominating Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson to the Supreme Court. If she's confirmed, she'd be the first black woman to ever have that job. But some leading Republicans, they're lining up for a fight over that nomination.
All this as the president considers his foreign policy options, with Russian troops moving in on the Ukrainian capital of Kyiv. Let's talk about all this with our Friday Politics Roundtable. Ron Elving is senior editor and correspondent at NPR, just connected with us. Hi, Ron.
Hey, good to hear your voice.
And Margaret Tolov is managing editor for Axios. Happy Friday, Margaret.
Thank you. Hi, Peter. Hi, Scott. And hi, Ron.
Hi.
Hello.
Margaret, we'll get to Ukraine, but let's start with the Supreme Court. President Biden had promised to nominate a black woman to the high court, and here we are. Big moment?
Of course, it's a huge moment. It obviously would make good on his campaign promise of 2 years ago. Can you believe it? It feels like 20 years has passed in the last 2 years.
A lot has happened.
It would be significant, obviously, because she would be the first black woman if confirmed, because it would bring the number of women on the court to 4. That's right. Almost half, as close to half as you can get without being more than half on a 9-member court. It's also significant because this is someone who has been in her past a federal public defender for a period of time and on a sentencing commission. It would bring a different point of view and represent a different segment of the American public. It's not significant in the sense of some Supreme Court nominations where you're replacing, you know, a liberal with a conservative or a conservative with a liberal or changing the balance of power. This was Justice Breyer's own former clerk. It would be the replacement of what is considered a liberal nominee, a liberal judge, justice with another liberal member. Nonetheless, it is, of course, an election year. It is a midterm year. And any Supreme Court nomination is a big deal. She's 51. She could be on the court for decades.
Yeah, and of course, she would have to be confirmed. So, Ron, let's parse some tweets from GOP senators. Lindsey Graham is on the Judiciary Committee, and he tweeted that, I expect a respectful but interesting hearing for Judge Jackson. And then he tweeted, her choice means the radical left has won President Biden over again. And Mitch McConnell, minority leader, said Judge Jackson was the favored choice of far-left dark money groups. Ron, you speak Beltway. Translate.
What they're trying to say is that they're planning to oppose this nominee despite the historic nature of her nomination. In Lindsey Graham's case, he also had a preferred candidate from South Carolina, Michelle Childs, who is a U.S. district judge in South Carolina. He might not have voted for her either. We don't know that. But he did have a connection from South Carolina in that regard. And there were some who felt that perhaps Judge Childs would be able to get some Republican votes, maybe just two from South Carolina, but that would be quite a start. Here, I think what we're seeing is that while I think Margaret's actually right, that this is the replacement of a liberal with another liberal, there is going to be some effort made by the Republicans to cast Judge Jackson as something other than a Stephen Breyer kind of liberal, someone who is much more pleasing to the party's more progressive wing and much more pleasing to its anti-corporate activists, and somebody who would not be seen as much as a center-left judge or justice as Stephen Breyer has been seen.
But, Margaret, three Republican senators did confirm Judge Jackson for her current job. Does that count this time around?
It probably counts with at least two of the three. I mean, we won't know until we know. But you can, if you're reading the tea leaves in Ron's Beltway speak, it is true that while McConnell and Graham and some Republicans have been critical of the process, critical of Biden or Biden's supporters on the left, they have stayed away for the most part from attacking Judge Jackson personally. And McConnell went out of his way to make clear that he didn't object to Biden committing to nominating a black woman. It's possible for senators to vote to allow the nomination to proceed to a vote and still vote against her. And as long as that happens, you know, she can become the next justice on the Supreme Court. The question, the political question, purely political question for Mitch McConnell and the Republican Party is, if they think that Biden and the Democrats are going to be deeply in trouble over inflation or COVID or, you know, critical race theory or schools or whatever, Ukraine, Afghanistan, do they really want to distract from that and pick a fight with a woman of color that could inspire Democrats to turn out at the polls in larger numbers than they would have otherwise? And I think that is the conventional wisdom on why she may get a fight, but is unlikely to be blocked. Plus, she was just confirmed, so she's pretty thoroughly vetted.
Ron, briefly, I do want to ask you about her judicial record and then move on to Ukraine and Russia. In one of her most notable opinions in the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, she wrote that presidents are not kings, which required, in her ruling, then-President Trump's counsel to testify before Congress. She has also represented as a public defender Guantanamo Bay detainees. Talk about her record, what might come up, and what might be a concern.
Now, she has not been on the appellate level long enough to have what you would call a real track record, but you have cited perhaps her most often quoted line from her time at this particular level. But she has been around. She worked on the sentencing commission before she was actually a member of the commission. She was noted for winning some unusual commutations, for getting some people sentences reduced. And she was noted as a person who really took the public defender kind of job seriously. She wasn't in that job very long, just a couple of years. But somebody who has a perspective on all of this, especially the criminal side of what the court does, that is much more the gritty, much more the down-to-earth, everyday justice that's administered in this country in terms of criminal law than we've seen in some while with respect to people being appointed to the Supreme Court.
Well, let's turn to Russia and Ukraine. Margaret, I want to talk to you about sanctions and the politics surrounding those decisions. The White House has, of course, worked with its NATO allies and imposed a certain level of sanctions on Russia. But yesterday, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell urged President Biden to ratchet the sanctions all the way up, including cutting off Russian oil and gas exports. And he blamed the president for setting the stage for Russian aggression by showing what he called weakness on the world stage. Let's listen.
I think the precipitous withdrawal from Afghanistan in August was a signal, an invitation to the autocrats in the world that maybe this was a good time to make a move.
So, Margaret, does the president appear unwilling to go as far as others want him to go?
I mean, I think you have to look at this in two pieces. There's going to be there already has been a significant politicization of this from the Republican end ahead of the midterms, and you're going to continue to see that. But I also think Biden and his advisors have shown and said pretty clearly that they're contending really with two things as they proceed with sanctions. And one is, are they moving at the pace with the rest of the Western allies? The U.S. really can't get too far ahead of what Germany or Italy, for example, is willing to do. And the second part is that the U.S. has been trying to make calculations about whether the sanctions would have any immediate impact on what Putin is doing, and have concluded so far, no, that the sanctions are long-term consequences, but that there's no sanction going after Putin personally or whatever, what have you. There's no sanction that would have stopped him from doing this. And so having made that calculation, that's how they've been proceeding to ratchet things up. We've seen some indications in literally just the last few hours that SWIFT, this banking system Germany had been resisting applying SWIFT sanctions to Ukraine, that could be changing now. But then a counterbalance, we're seeing questions about whether that would just drive Russia further into China's arms. So for every sanction,
perhaps an alternative kind of global payment systems and more bifurcation
exactly
of
right.
the world economy.
That's exactly right. So for every sanction, there are implications. There are implications on Americans' pocketbooks. This is going to increase gas prices. There are implications on relations with Western allies. And you can also be sure that President Biden's political allies at home would then attack him if gas prices went up. You know, it's not he can throw the book at, Russia with sanctions and then still be criticized for the downstream effects. So the White House has been trying clearly to balance, the immediate immediate bite of sanctions with the downstream consequences of them. Having said that, there are a lot of Democrats also in Congress who would like to see severe sanctions, swift sanctions, harsh sanctions. The fact that Nord Stream 2 is now finally off the table after the Germans wouldn't budge for so long has kind of driven the frustration of members in both parties who wanted to take the most aggressive approach possible and are now looking at the tragedy unfolding. Zelensky literally telling, leaders, European leaders, this might be the last time you talk to me while I'm alive. Wow. It is a horror to watch. And everybody understands the politics of NATO and whether the U.S. or other countries can come to every country's defense. Nonetheless, it is a horror unfolding before all of our eyes.
Certainly is. Margaret Taleb, Axios Managing Editor, and Ron Elving, Senior Editor and Correspondent at NPR. Thanks to you both.